Well, Happy New Year. It's 2020. It's the beginning of a year, depending on how you count it, the beginning of a decade. Some would say this is the last year of the decade because it's the 10, right? Nice round number to end with. Others, it's the beginning of the 20s, which also makes sense. So either way, we're at the beginning of a year, and we look out ahead at what is going to take place in this next year or decade or however long into the future you want to look. We also, at this time of year, sometimes look back at the past and things that have happened. And I saw some posts on social media of people talking about the things that have happened in the last 10 years, in the teens, since 2010, and how life has changed and how things have progressed. And so now as we reach the next roaring 20s, what's going to happen in anticipation of what is yet to come. Each year at this time, on the 12th or so day after Christmas, we look much further back at the event that was recorded in Matthew chapter 2. Still continuing to live in this glow of Christmas, each year we remember the Magi coming and paying visit to Jesus. Still in Bethlehem, this season, or this event, marks a season that we call Epiphany. A word that in modern use implies maybe an intuition or a sudden realization of something, right? Ah, I had an epiphany. I could have had a V8. My kids didn't get that, I don't think. Wow. I just figured out the solution to a problem or something of that nature, right? That's an epiphany in the way we use it now. But the word epiphany actually is more related in its original use to revelation, something being enlightened from a source. So in this season of Epiphany over the next several weeks, we're going to talk about the light shining and revealing who Jesus is, that the light shines in this darkness in which we live. Isaiah chapter 9, we hear this reading connected to the season of Advent and Christmas. People who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them has light shone. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, that's where we find ourselves. We're dwelling in the dark. It's where we live, in this dark world. I remember when I was a kid being afraid of the dark. Anybody share that fear with me? Others are maybe a little timid to admit it because maybe then the monsters that are under the bed will realize we're still afraid of it. I had this fear. I didn't want to have all the lights off where I lived when I was a kid. We had a two-story house, and on one side was my sister's room, and my room was on the other side, and the stairs came up in the middle, and there was kind of a landing space there. And the light over the stairs, if it was on, then the light would reflect off the wall and then come into the room. And I remember laying in my bed, and the pattern of light on the ceiling and on the opposite wall from where my bed was almost all the time. And it was comforting to have that light on because then I could see. Then I would be able to, you know, if I ever woke up in the night, I would be able to see the surroundings. I would know that everything was fine. Sometimes it's comforting to have the light on. Sometimes light is comforting because even as an adult, dark streets and unfamiliar places, for example, can be a bit frightening, can make us nervous. When you're in darkness and things are still, then sounds start to sound a little creepy. And any motion can be maybe a little suspicious. And so even now, I prefer light to dark. I prefer what's known to the unknown, what's familiar to the unfamiliar. And so light helps because this world is wrapped in darkness. Herod shows up in this reading, King Herod, also known as Herod the Great. had a bit of a dark past. Herod is remembered as a builder and a great leader, but he also is remembered as one who, well, was paranoid and therefore eliminated threats to the throne. His wife and her family, three of his own sons. Herod also had a dark future because following the arrival of the Magi, as they are looking for one who is born to be the king, well, he doesn't want that. So if we continued in Matthew 2, we would see that Herod dispatched soldiers to take out any kids, two and younger, in the town of Bethlehem. Thankfully, Jesus and his family are sent away first and escape that. But Herod is just an example of the darkness in this world. The world is full of sin, a sinful condition that's existed since the fall and continues. We see it, we feel it, we've experienced it because ignorance and evil abound. Those words are often tied into our definition or use of darkness, ignorance and evil. I was kept in the dark about that. I didn't know, in other words. I was ignorant of it because it was hidden, or I was shielded from it. And there's nothing wrong with being ignorant. I'm ignorant of a lot of things. There's a lot of things we don't know, right? I don't play wind instruments. I don't know how to weld. Don't understand quantum mechanics. I don't use words like how many knots or nautical miles things are. I like to learn things, but I won't ever know everything. None of us can. Darkness is also used as a metaphor for evil. Star Wars picks that up with the dark side. Old Westerns, what color hats do the bad guys wear? Black hats, right? And the Bible has references and connections to dark and light as bad and good, as evil and good. Comparing works of darkness against the armor of light. Equating darkness with lawlessness. Talking about the unfruitful works of darkness or the domain of darkness. The Bible have all these references and sets the stage and the tone for our understanding that the darkness is evil. And evil is darkness and this connection that we continue to have. But darkness and evil is not just a concept. It's real and it's even personal. We've seen it, we feel it, we experience it, and we have it within. When we examine our lives, examine our hearts, there's a darkness that we have exhibited because this sinful condition continues to affect us. And the sin that we've committed and the evil that we've done is why we need Jesus. But thankfully, the light shines in the darkness. In the prologue of John's Gospel, in John chapter 1, it begins with these words, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And when you get to verse 5, it says, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." That's the thing about light and dark. Darkness cannot overcome light. It doesn't work that way. Light will always penetrate darkness. If there is light in a dark room, it can fill the room. If there's light in the tunnel, you know that there's something there. If you've been in a very dark space, a very dark room, even the smallest amount of light can light up the whole place. A lot of times at night, I'll be the last one going to bed, which means I'll go through the house and I'll turn off any remaining lights. So I'll go in the family room and turn off the lights, and lately the Christmas tree, so turn it off, and then, so the light disappears before my eyes can adjust, and the entire space feels almost pitch black. Maybe you've experienced this too, where after a little while, just the smallest amount of light we can see more than we would maybe expect to see. We have one of those outlets in the bathroom that has like a little LED in it that shows that it's on or working, or I don't even know what it means, actually. I should probably know, but I don't. But, you know, by the time my eyes adjust, if I go in there, now I can see everything in that space because just the smallest amount of light will light up the entire space. That the darkness cannot win against the light. The darkness can't push back against the light. The light will always penetrate into it, will always reach into the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. The star, this light that shone, it pointed the way to Jesus. And so as we consider this account of the Magi coming, we see verse 9, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. The Magi knew that a king had been born, that something special had happened for Israel, that something unique was going on. The nature of the star is a mystery. It's not likely that it was the Christmas card depiction of an enormous star in the sky, right, with streams of light that are just encircling the manger, right? This is unlikely, because a lot of people would have noticed that and probably shown up, like, what's going on? I remember when I was younger, the searchlights would be used for, like, advertising. Do you remember that? Like those giant, you know, beams of light that would sweep across the sky. I remember as a kid, like, we would go to where that source of that light was. I wanted to know what's going on. And there were times when we would, like, drive, and we'd be looking out the window. Oh, it's over there. It's over that way. And we'd turn, and the roads in Southwest Ohio are windy, and like it's very hilly there. It's not so different from this direction here, where there's windy roads and curvy roads and hilly roads and all that stuff. And so, you know, to find it sometimes was a bit of a challenge because you'd be going along a road and then that road would turn and you want to go that way. So we'd wind our way around, and eventually we could get to the bottom of this, actually, to where this great big light was. And sometimes it was like, oh, it's a car dealership, and we don't need a car. And we'd go home. Sometimes, though, it was like a fair or something really fun, so it was worth it to go find it. But there's no, like, historical record of anyone else noticing the star. If Orion's belt, like, moved to a different place in the sky, I wouldn't know. If a star fell out of the Big Dipper, that I would probably recognize. But other than that, no clue. I can kind of point out some of the constellations, but not many. And I rarely look. I don't look up and go, what is that doing there? And it's believed that's really more like what the Magi saw. Either the alignment of constellations, or maybe even more likely, a planet moving across the sky in a certain way and interacting with constellations in a way that made them think something special's going on. And they went, and they found what they were looking for. They followed the sign from the east to Jerusalem, to Bethlehem, and found the one who was born. Well, it's not just a star that points the way to Jesus. Your light has come. We heard those words in Isaiah chapter 60. Isaiah, looking forward, ahead to a time when light would come, said this, "Arise, shine, your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you." Talking to the nation of Israel, talking about one who was to come, and preparing us in a prophetic way to understand and to see Jesus. Your light has come. The light of the world has come. And that light has come to us so that we see in the one the Magi find, not just one born to be king of the Jews, but one born to be king of kings and lord of lords. One born to be king of the universe and savior of the world. One who's birth, whose life, whose death and resurrection set him apart from any person in all of history. Because he's not just a person. He's God. Born in the flesh with the purpose of redeeming us, to be king of our hearts, to be king of the world, to save and redeem us. And so we worship the King. Verse 11 of Matthew 2, they saw the child. They fell down and worshiped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Along with the Magi, we can worship in this way. We can offer him our gold and frankincense and myrrh. I don't know how much gold you're carrying. But gold can represent our financial resources, and we can worship in that way, and we do. It's an act of our worship to offer from our best to God. And our myrrh and our frankincense, well, chances are we don't carry that. 5 years ago when we went to support Kip and Ivy in their mission field, and on the way back, we got a chance to be in Dubai for 17 hours. So we went to a spice market in Dubai, and we bought frankincense there. Right? So it's in our spice cabinet in a little container. We should get it out today. And remember that we have frankincense. Now, we're not probably going to carve a little bit off and bring it and put it in the offering plate, because I don't think our offering counters or our bank would know what to do with it. But we can give to God things that are fragrant. Things that create an environment of peace and welcome. We can offer our prayers as incense before him, so that as we worship, as we pray, it's an act of our worship to give this fragrant offering to our God. We can worship our God in these ways, along with the Magi. We can bow before him. We can offer our gifts. We can offer even our lives, that we would reflect the light. Because following the star is more than just arriving at the mangers. It's seeking, it's worshiping, and following Jesus. We don't want to just find Jesus once. See, here's the thing. We don't know what happened with the Magi. They worship Jesus, and then they're warned in a dream to go back to their country another way. And they do. They depart, and they leave, and we don't hear anything more about them. Did they go back and talk about what they'd seen and experienced? Likely they did, particularly with each other, but maybe they shared that with some people around them. Did they pay attention? Did they learn his name and maybe some things about him so that 30 years later, when a whole lot of things about Jesus were happening, did they know? We don't know. Did it affect the rest of their lives, this encounter that they had with Jesus? We don't know if it did, but what we hope for, what we want, what we desire is that it would for us. That this encounter that we have with Jesus would make an impact on our lives that lasts, that lingers, that we would reflect the light. Because the world is wrapped in darkness. In Isaiah chapter 60, verse 2, this was part of our first reading. Behold, darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples. That continues. That continues in this world in which we live, that there is deep darkness. Like we said, we've seen it, we've experienced it, we know it and understand it. It's all around us even still. The light has come, but the world is still dark, so the world needs us. The world needs us to walk in the light. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul picks up that same theme of light and darkness, and he says this at verse 8. At one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light. In other words, live in such a way that the light is evident, that the light shows. In this dark world, we carry the light. We're light bearers, in other words. We can bring the light with us as we go from place to place by walking in the light. That means by living lives that are reflective of this grace we've received, this light that is within us, that show and demonstrate what we believe by who we are. The two greatest commandments that Jesus said are, love the Lord your God with your heart, your soul, your mind, your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Let's practice those things. Loving God by putting him first, by setting our priorities based on his word and his instruction, and by loving our neighbors as a vocation, as a calling to live out in this world, that we would connect with people who are around us. Not just necessarily the people that live next door, but any neighbor. Any person in need, anyone we can befriend, anyone we can support and encourage, because people need us. There's a lot of people that we know already who need this truth that we have, who need this hope that we cling to, who need this Jesus, who need us, that the light would shine through us. Light shines through you. Isaiah 60 continued, but the Lord will rise upon you and his glory will be seen upon you. That's what it means to reflect the light. I remember a number of years ago, I was in this like group kind of training exercise. I don't remember even all the context of it, but the exercise that we had to do as a small group around a table was, you know, okay, here's the scenario. You were in a plane that just crash landed, and there's all these things that you have like 5 minutes to gather all the stuff that you need, all that you can salvage from the wreck before it like explodes or something. So here's the list of things that you can see. So what's your prioritized list? And so there was all kinds of things, and we're thinking we need food, we need shelter, we need fire, we need, you know, here's the list. And so, you know, some people were like, oh, yeah, let's raid the beverage cart. Okay, that'd be fun. But, you know, there's a suitcase, and there's, you know, clothing, and there's seat cushions, and there's a ladies' compact. Compact? Is that what it's called? That thing? The mirror on there, right? And I remember having the conversation. We're in a plane crash. We don't need to know what we look like. That's not our highest priority. And that was the number one thing we should have gotten. Not because we're going to look at that mirror, because that mirror can be used. So you can do this. And reflect the light of the sun at passing airplanes, because it's much more efficient to reflect the light of the sun at the plane than try to do this. Reflect the light in that way. The light of the sun reflected from us into this dark world. As we have the light shine through us, reflecting that light, it can reach new places. It can connect to new people so that others can see what we have seen. So that others can come to know this one who was born to be king of all creation. Let's live in that way. If you've set a New Year's resolution, or even if you haven't, let me challenge you to do this. Let's live in such a way that people know Jesus through us. Let's all set that resolution so that in 2020, people see Jesus. People know him and come to faith in him through us and the things that we do. Amen.